This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Everyone, and welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, a podcast all about Joshi Pro Wrestling. I'm Aaron, and I'm joined by my co-host, Taylor. What's up, Taylor?
Hi, how's it going? I'm coming to you half vaccinated now. I got my first COVID vaccine on Thursday, so very excited for that. I hope all of our listeners, if you are able to, are also getting the vaccine, but happy to take another step towards maybe a little bit more of a normal world and maybe some Joshi shows that have full, loud audiences in them.
Yes, please. I am fully vaccinated and I've struggled a lot with like, well, what can I or should I do now? And I really kind of just still do the same things that I did before. But a lot of people have given me crap about it of like, dude, you can go out to like eat or whatever, but I don't know. I still feel weird about going to restaurants.
I have a feeling that after I get my second one, that I probably will be the same as you are until my job. I'm working from home now, and I'm assuming there will be some point where my job says, hey, time to start coming back into the office. And I'm assuming at that point, that's when I'll sort of start getting into it, because I'll have a regular schedule where I'm going outside. You know, sometimes you're like in your house, and I live by myself, so I'm not often sitting around going, oh, maybe I should go by myself out to eat. You know, that's not really a, you know, thing I do normally anyway, just go out to eat by myself. So yeah, I'm assuming I'll be like you and my schedule will stay relatively the same. For at least a little while longer.
Yeah, I'm just starting to get, a little itchy about wanting to do some stuff. But hopefully, I mean, it seems like it's speeding up, people getting vaccinated. So hopefully that will continue. And I don't know, it's hard for me to imagine whether things are ever going to be normal again, but maybe they will be.
Yes, I have. This is a bit of a crossover here, but I do have tickets for AEW Dynamite on September 15th in New Jersey. It's been rescheduled a number of times, but that feels sort of like, hey, maybe by that point, the middle of September, we still have a number of months till then. Maybe that'll be the normal point, and that will be my first wrestling show in, 2 years probably at that point. So that's sort of a goalpost that I have now for, you know, quote unquote, normal activity.
Yeah, I've been hoping to be able, if they end up doing it, to do Double or Nothing in Chicago on Labor Day weekend. I don't know. That's like a big event. And I have friends that live in Chicago, and it's like, oh, maybe we would all go and could see our friends and such. But now I think, you know, my friend Aaron Taub is going to Jacksonville for maybe that's Double or Nothing. And the one in September is All Out, I guess. It's like, I don't know. Do I want to go to Jacksonville? Not really, but it would be fun to see my vaccinated friends. So hard to say what I'm going to do. I'm definitely going to some music festivals in September. I just want everybody to know I'm doing that. So hopefully it's safe. We'll find out. We're on Twitter at JBombAudio. I tweeted from the account, which is not common, but I was wanting everybody to watch the Tokyo Joshi Pro show that we're going to talk about later. So I sent out some tweets about that. I'm at Aaron Like the Car if you want to find all my other tweets. And Taylor's at Tay Mambo, from which he does not tweet that often. He tweets from J-Bomb Audio more often than Tay Mambo.
That is 100% true.
Yeah, not a big poster, Taylor.
I like to consume content rather. Well, I'm creating content right now, so I guess that's not entirely true. But in the world of Twitter, I am a Twitter consumer rather than a Twitter creator.
Were you ever like a message board user?
I was a message board user many years ago when I was in high school. I was part of the WrestleCrap forums, which was really how in my sort of high school days when I was into wrestling, that's how I got most of my wrestling information. I didn't know many people in my day-to-day life that liked wrestling or enjoyed wrestling. And that was at the point where we didn't have the sort of technology we do now with Twitter didn't exist, or things like Slacks or, you know, Discords, and where you can just sort of find people that also like wrestling. So that was sort of my one station to get the news, learn about wrestling and things like that. So I was a forum user, although not a huge poster on the forums either.
All right. So it's just your MO. Yeah. I think like, you know, when AOL would like send out the discs and stuff, you know, you would get on AOL on your computer. I think the first time I ever did, like the first thing I did was find a wrestling chat room. You know, I must have done like AOL keyword WWF or something. And there I was talking to people about wrestling. And then from there, it was like I had to find the scoops, you know, I had to go to the news sites, Raja, you know, that kind of stuff in those days.
We used to get a lot of those AOL discs. I don't know that we ever... Could you use multiple of them? I thought the whole thing was you could only use one, and that was like your free trial, and then you had to sign up.
I have no idea. I don't know, but I definitely used at least one of them. And then we pretty early had the internet at my house compared to like my friends and stuff. So yeah, I was a pretty early internet user. And I did nothing good with it. It's only made my life worse since it started.
And still haven't to this day.
That's right. No. All right. Subscribe to the podcast, please. If you search Jumping Bomb Audio on whatever podcast app you use, whatever you're listening to this on right now, hit subscribe. You'll get these as soon as they come out, which is generally every other Monday. I think we've hit Tuesdays a couple of times, but it's almost always every other Monday. Give us a 5-star rating and review if you use the Apple Podcast app to consume our podcast, or even if you don't, if you just have access to the Apple Podcast app, go give us a 5-star rating and review. And if you'd like to donate to the show just to send us a few bucks as a little thank you, you can go to redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. The main things we're going to talk about today are the Tokyo Joshi Pro still incomplete from 417 and the Stardom Cinderella tournament. And I know we'll talk about more stuff, but that's the primary focus of the show today. And let's kick it off with that Tokyo Joshi Pro show. My wife was sitting with me as the show was starting, and she was like, why does it keep saying still incomplete on the graphics? Like, oh, that's the name, the very strange name of the show. I don't know. It's here it is.
And it's different than most Tokyo Joshi shows, or at least a few years ago, the running joke that they were like full run-on sentences that were like, hey, have you ever been to Shinjuku Face? It's a fun place to go and see a wrestling show. And that would be the name of the Tokyo Joshi show.
Yeah, so they've at least shortened it. It's just I'm not quite sure what it means, but that's okay. Let's start with your overall thoughts, Taylor, on this show from Korakuen Hall.
I thought it was a good show. I don't think it was, you know, comparing it to the other Korakuens from this year, I don't know that it was the strongest in-ring-wise, but I enjoyed it. Tokyo Joshi has done really well at really keeping their shows moving. Nothing really felt like it overstayed its welcome. Nothing felt too long. I never watched the show and was like, oh, this is dragging, or like, oh my God, how many more matches do we have? So, you know, I enjoyed it. And there were matches I really enjoyed on the show. So overall, I think it was a strong show. Some sort of newsworthy items on the show as well. So overall, gets a positive Thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I basically agree. It didn't blow me away, certainly, but it's kind of like what we talked about, I think last time we talked about the Big Tokyo Joshi Pro Show, which is they've really done a good job of lengthening their cards or like spreading out the talent more along the whole card. So there's not as much, there's less weak stuff on these shows. Like almost everything has a baseline of being pretty good. Now you're not going to get your mileage may vary on like these six woman tags that are always like the second match on the show or the openers. Although for me, there's a lot of cool stuff in the opener, to focus on, but you got a lot of, you know, basically starting from the, Miyu Yamashita versus Sakari Noah match to the end, there's like a pretty good baseline level of quality in the matches. But there wasn't a real blow away, match for me on the show, but I enjoyed the show immensely. Had a good time, easy watch, even though it was getting pretty late and I'm old, but it was still enjoyable. So I think I agree with you, Taylor.
Yeah, it didn't quite have, I know, of the last Korakuen. The last Korakuen to me was so, there was nothing blow away on that last Korakuen either, but it had such good consistency, especially sort of in the second half of the show, that I don't think that this one quite met. There were some matches where I was not so hot on them as compared to, you know, the last show where I was like, oh yeah, 3¾, 3¾, you know, I was like, wow, all these matches are really solid. It wasn't quite there yet. And I think you can sort of look at this card, and we've talked a lot about how Tokyo Joshi is having such a great, you know, last few months, last 6 months, however many months it is, but, and this still was very good. As I said, I liked it, but you can still see that there's a little bit more to go in terms of the in-ring stuff, where there's still a little bit, you know, they haven't filled in all the gaps. They've gotten much better compared to a year or longer ago, but there's still, you know, here and there some things that you might say, okay, they're doing well, but there's still room for improvement.
And before the show, there's been, I think this, you know, this information was out there. They were already talking about it on Twitter leading up to the show. But Yuki Arai, who is an idol from SKE 48, they announced she's going to be debuting on the May 4th show. My understanding is she's still going to be in her idol group, right?
I believe so. And I think that she's had some involvement in wrestling in the past, not heavy involvement, but she's done some wrestling related projects. So she's not totally foreign to the world. I don't know what the, especially with the COVID stuff going on, I don't know what the SKE 48 schedule is like. So I don't know if it's very easy for her just to, you know, pop into Tokyo Joshi every once in a while or not. But we'll see. It's exciting, you know, always exciting to get a new, you know, debut, someone new. And I think that Tokyo Joshi now has figured out, whereas a year ago they were debuting, you know, it was like someone every month and it almost felt overwhelming. It feels like we've gotten, you know, Risa Endo in, we've sort of established her, and now we're bringing someone new. So it feels better paced from a sort of debut perspective, that we've gotten the person in, we know who they are, now we can get a new person.
Will also be interesting because I think Endo has really set a new level for debuts in Tokyo Joshi Pro. So I'm interested to see what Yuki Arai's level is when she debuts.
Yeah, and debuting on now another Korakuen show, which is, you know, a big deal. It's, you know, they're bigger shows, at least, you know, for the next couple months. The Korakuen Hall shows are their big shows. So a big stage to debut on.
And that show is also going to have English commentary, I believe. So
yes, you are correct.
Yeah, so that'll be exciting. They also talked about their Tokyo Princess Cup. So it's going to be the first two rounds are going to be in four shows, all at Shinkiba First Ring. So they'll be at Shinkiba First Ring four nights in a row, July 22nd through July 25. The quarterfinals will happen at Shinjuku Face on July 31. And then the finals will occur at Korakuen Hall on August 15. So really stretching out the Tokyo Princess Cup.
Yeah, and I don't remember, Aaron, do you remember what the scheduling was of the... Didn't they do a ton of shows in a row for the Princess Cup last year? Or am I... It totally left my head. But it feels like maybe they did just do four shows in a row last year.
I feel like they all happened pretty close together, honestly. But it's been some time now. So for me to remember, obviously it's not going well. So yeah, it looks like they did August 8th, 9th, 10th, then the 15th were the semifinals, or no, the quarterfinals, right? And then I think on the last night, yeah, they did the quarterfinals on the 15th, and on the 29th, they did the semifinals and the finals on the same night.
Got it.
So the first two rounds were just over three nights, so they're adding an extra night, basically.
Okay. Yeah, it should be, you know, and it's good to have these Korakuen Hall shows, you know, more often for Tokyo Joshi because it gives them something, you know, to sort of aim for something like this where you can say, oh, now the finals of this is a big deal, you know, being at Korakuen Hall instead of, you know, wherever, you know, Shinjuku Face or Shinkiba or wherever it happens to be or has happened to be in the past. You know, it's good to have a Korakuen Hall to sort of have enable you to make these a bigger, these, you know, tournaments and these matches a bigger deal.
Yeah, I agree. No, it's exciting. It feels like we're getting more shows from Tokyo Joshi Pro that you can really sink your teeth into and that are really important. You got to watch them. And I feel like they're not just doing it to do it. They're living up to it. They are putting together cards that are worthy. They're building up stories that are like, okay, I want to tune in and watch, you know, this Korakuen Hall show every month or whatever. Okay, let's get into the show. It kicked off with Marika Kobashi and Sena Shiori defeating Arisu Endo and Moka Miyamoto. Sena submitted Moka. I thought it was a single leg crab, but Mr. Hakusan said that it was a single leg crab and an arm bar of some sort.
Yeah, I believe it's a new, debuting finisher or, you know, submission for her.
And it was her first win, Sena Shiori's first win in Tokyo Joshi Pro.
It's a big deal, you know, in this opening match, you know, looked in many ways like many of these opening matches do on these Tokyo Joshi shows, especially on these bigger shows when they just get some of the younger wrestlers in. I thought it was fairly all right. There was some moments when they clearly sort of got lost in what they were trying to do. But, you know, four of the younger wrestlers on the roster, that will happen sometimes. And so, you know, I thought it was a nice little fun match.
I agree. It was a nice time to see Sena get a win. I feel like she's coming into her own. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I just kind of enjoyed it. It's a good little opener, basically. All right. Then we had Miyu Watanabe, Raku, and Pam Harajuku defeating Haruna Neko, Mahiro Kiru, and Yuna Manase. New gear for Pam. Raku pinned Neko with the full course finish.
Yeah, another one. You know, not too much to say. I did like Pom's new gear, Aaron. I don't know if.
Oh,
if
well, you that's thought it interesting. Was...
Did you not like it?
No, I loved it. But someone pointed out to me that it was eerily similar to Ari Sousa's gear.
No, that's not true. No.
You hate it. That was gear that you hated.
No, but it's not similar. It's only similar in that it has the sort of tartan, but Ari Sousa's gear looked like she was like a schoolgirl dress. This was not, because Pom has the hat. It's much more sort of, I don't know, I saw it much more sort of like a bagpipe player, sort of, what do you call those people? Bagpipists? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't
Bagpiper?
Well, Mr. Hakusan tweeted out an 80s band called The Checkers. Hakusan called them an 80s band and fashion icons. And their their getup looked very similar to what Pom was wearing. So he believes that she must be a big fan of theirs.
I can't believe you snuck up on me with an Aries Sousa. I can't believe you would do that to me.
Well, I have to shout out a friend of the show, Tharos, who actually made the joke to me of like, oh, wow, you know, she looks really a lot like Aries Sousa, and Taylor hated that getup. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get Taylor with this. So it really worked out perfectly that you were like, oh, I really liked this.
Yeah, but I thought it looked, you know, do we know if it's a permanent, or is she going to switch between, do we know?
I don't think we know at all.
Okay, well, I guess we'll have to find out. But other than that, you know, another solid match. I was happy to see Yuna, you know, who seems to come in and out, which is great for them when they need, you know, someone. But other than that, not too much to say about the match itself.
And if anyone doesn't remember, Aries Sousa was like in those early Stardom shows that we talked about when there was no other wrestling happening.
Yeah. And if you don't remember that, you can go back in the archives and listen to those shows.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, this kind of, they basically mix and match a few people every show in this spot with like this six woman tag. And it was pretty similar to all the other ones. So it was, I mean, it was enjoyable. Then we got into the business end of the card with Miyu Yamashita defeating Hikari Noah. I thought this was quite good.
I thought it was really great. You know, a short, you know, not too long of a match, but I thought it was really good. Of course, Miyu is very good. Always looks good. I thought Hikari Noah looked great. She threw some great suplexes. She had, in about the middle of the match, she had that pinning sort of combination. I think she pulled out the Last Supper, I believe, was one of them, which I was very impressed by. And I loved the finish. It looked really great. It looked so great that actually I rewound and I watched it again with Miyu delivering the skull kick, which ended up looking great. So I thought it was one where, you know, obviously we know why Miyu won for later in the show. But I thought both of them came out looking better, especially Hikari Noh, who has really gotten, you know, Tokyo Joshi has gotten behind her in the last few weeks. And I think that she has delivered for them.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. It's interesting. Yes, she did pull out the Last Supper, which, you know, I just want to say, you know, that's a finisher. You know, nobody should kick out of the Last Supper, IMO. But it's like, first about Hikari Noah, like I'm enjoying this singles run that she's on. Like, and it feels like she's getting close, you know, to like breaking through, which is good. You got Miyu staying strong. I was trying to look back. I was thinking about, you know, how she's been booked since she lost the title. And I was looking at all her singles matches since then. And if I'm not mistaken, since she lost the title, she has only lost to Yuki Aino in the Spring Beautiful one-day tournament. And then, and that was a, you know, just like a well, it was a one-day tournament. It's right in the name. She lost to Chris Brooks. I don't really think that counts. And she lost to Shoko Nakajima in the Princess Cup last year. So she's been booked very strongly in singles matches since then. And of course, as you mentioned, you know, we're going to see later that she's going to challenge for the title again. But I think they've done a good job of separating her from the title picture while also making her feel important and still feeling strong.
Didn't she lose to, was that a singles match? Did she lose to Ito right before the January 4th?
That was a tag match.
Oh, okay. Then I misremember sure. that. Because I thought the whole thing was that they were going to have a match, and then they announced it was some fan voted something, and it was announced, it was like, oh, Yamashita against Ito, and I was like, oh, that's weird, they're doing a singles match right before they have another singles match. But it made sense, because I think at that match was when Ito debuted, the Ito special, which is what she won with, and then Miyu obviously got the win back at the Korakuen. But anyway,
so they went to a draw on December 19, and then they wrestled again in a best 2 out of 3 falls, but it was Kiru, Maki Ito, Riku Tatsumi, and Kamiyu versus the Bakuretsu sisters, Yamashita and Yuka Sakazaki. So I think that is the match in which Ito got a pinfall on her.
Yeah, so I have them flipped in my mind. But yeah, I mean, your point still stands that she has been, you know, well booked, but she doesn't feel like she's dominated the company. I mean, she doesn't feel out of place, you know, being third here and still winning. And it doesn't feel, you know, as I said, Akari Noah has been getting this push, but it doesn't feel like the company is shoving her. It feels like they're sort of bringing her along sort of very naturally. It'd be easy just to say, okay, now you're going to move up and be at the top of the card in, you know, 2 weeks. But she's continually growing. You know, she's not winning the matches quite yet, but that will be the next step as she, you know, continues to move up slowly. And that's, I think, a skill that Tokyo Joshi, the booking has, but also that they're able to do that because they have a number of talented people at the top of the card. They don't need to go 100 miles an hour and get someone at the top of the card. It's not an emergency, you know, so they can do this and really bring her along and build her up really well.
Yeah, it's also, they, you know, it's a good job of having a nice hierarchy in the promotion, because even though Miyu hasn't dominated, she's been away from the title, and Noah appears to be on this push upward, I felt like I knew going in that Miyu Yamashita was going to win the match, right? I would have been stunned if Hikari Noah pinned her in a singles match. So I still think it's booked so well from that perspective that you have a good sense of like who should win a match. And that's why it's so exciting when like Riku Tatsumi won the title when nobody expected it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. You know, they have done, I mean, it really has been, as we, you know, talked about earlier and have talked about, they have really done a lot of things right over the past X number of months. A combination of having the people and also, you know, booking them well. And, you know, hopefully that continues in the future and they're able to bring some of these sort, you know, obviously Endo just started a few months ago, but, you know, eventually that'll be an Endo thing or maybe a Palm Harajuku thing or a Senna Shiori, you know, and they've shown that they can develop these people from sort of the opening of the card into bigger wrestlers to fill the slots that they need.
I know some other promotions who could benefit from similar styles. Okay, next up we had B-Star, Mirai Mayumi and Suzume defeating the Magical Sugar Rabbits, Mizuki and Yuka Sakazaki, and the team of Hyper Misao and Shoko Nakajima. And Mayumi pinned Shoko in a pretty big surprise, like kind of what we were just talking about of the hierarchy, like a pretty big surprise that Mayumi would get a pin on a former Princess of Princess champion.
Yeah, and really blasted her with the lariat, which continues to look really good because she hit that one on Aja Kong. Now, she didn't knock her over, but she hit that great lariat. She hit another great lariat here. I mean, it looks really good. And my thoughts are, I can't believe that this is the company's first three-way tag match, because I thought that it was perfectly suited for the talent, for the sort of style of Tokyo Joshi, in that it really enabled all six of these wrestlers to really put their best foot forward. There was not a lot of downtime in the match where people could come in, they could do the stuff that looked really great, you know, the lariat, one big example, but they didn't have to stay in there and really hold the match for, you know, 8 minutes of time or however long, that they could come in, do the stuff that looked really great, get out, someone else would come in. There was a lot of different combinations going on. So I thought it was a really strong match, and I hope they do more of these because I thought it made all six look really great. I went 4 stars because it really shocked me. I went in sort of thinking, okay, they're going to sort of do this match and the winner's probably going to challenge for the tag titles. And it ended up really taking me by surprise.
It's also fun because if you look at this match before the show, you got two teams. I mean, obviously the Mizuki Yuka Sakazaki team is like a big team. And then the Hyper Masao and Shoko Nakajima team also feels at least bigger than the B-Star team. So you would expect one of those teams to win. Of course, when we see what happens later, I think it makes the most sense for the B-Star team to win here. But I was pretty shocked by the finish, honestly.
Yeah, I think what you said about it did sort of give the... It made sense in going hand in hand with the tag title match in that the other two teams, if you're going to have new champions, are not really the type of teams you would really want for a first defense, you know, Magical Sugar Rabbits or maybe, you know, in the conversation for one of the best Tokyo Joshi tag teams. And Masao and Nakajima are two big names. So you think, okay, who is going to, you know, be able to have an exciting, a good first defense, but not be someone who's going to be so favored that they look bad if they lose. And I think B-Star fits that very well. Mirai Mayumi continues to get better and better. I'm glad to see her get an opportunity for a tag title match because I think it will be really good. I'm really excited to see the Mayumi May Sam Michelle interactions because I think that would be very fun. So overall, you know, I think it was good. Makes really gives B-Star a boost and builds right into that Korakuen, which is just in a few weeks, very short amount of time.
Then we had the International Princess title match with the champion Yuki Kamifuku retaining by defeating Nao Kakuta with the Famouser. They really had a few sketchy parts in the match, I thought, where they kind of got lost. But it really got going toward the end, I thought, and hit a nice... They peaked the match very well. Like, it ended when it should have. And it was just... I was talking with some people earlier this week about, like, well, what is Kamiyu's, like, in-ring level? And they were saying, well, she's good enough, which I think is true, but I think it sells her short a little bit. So I was a little disappointed that this didn't kind of hit on all cylinders, but by the end, they certainly figured out what they wanted to do, and it was good.
Yeah, I think this out of, I mean, excluding the first two matches, which are always sort of the younger wrestlers and you don't expect too much, this is really the one place where, as I was talking about before, you think, okay, you know, this company's come a long way in terms of in-ring. They're not quite there yet. I didn't think this was bad, but it just sort of went and then it ended. And I was sort of like, that was, you know, that was all right. I think Kamifuku is good. I think that she's still, though, at a stage in her her career in-ring wise where she greatly benefits from someone a little bit more experienced who can sort of go with her and lift her up as opposed to someone sort of on her same level or maybe slightly below. So I thought overall it was fine. It didn't really at any point grab me all that much. I don't know that I really expected a title change at any point. So probably this was, for me, at least in the top, you know, the sort of quote-unquote business end of the card, I think this was probably the weakest match for me.
I think that's fair. Next up, we had a match I know I was looking forward to with the tag titles on the line and the Neo Bishiki-gun, Saki-sama, and Mei-san Michelle team won. They defeated the Bakuretsu sisters. They are the new champions.
I said when we were previewing this on the last episode, I said, don't bet against Neo Bishiki-gun when it comes to these tag title matches. And here they are winning the tag titles, which I'm excited for. You know, we've talked about in the past, Mei-san Michelle and Saki-sama are both very good. This match, I thought it was good. It wasn't quite up to the expectations I had, especially with Mei-san Michelle. I had a little bit you know, sort of outsized expectations. It didn't quite, the match didn't quite meet, but I still thought it was very good. I loved the bulldog on the outside to Saki-sama. I thought that looked really great. And I liked the sort of story of the end of the match of Mei San Michelle sort of being left alone with Saki-sama out on the outside of the ring and having to pull out the roll up to win. So overall, a solid, good match, but didn't blow me away like I thought it might.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. Although I know I've been kind of low on Baku Retsu Sisters generally, but I love this Niobe Shikigun team. It was fun to see Mei get the win, you know, and win the titles for her team. Thought that was great. But it also just had, it was built up in a way that it had that thing down the stretch where you are grabbed by the changes in momentum because you really don't know who's going to win. Like, I think we both expected Niobe Shikigun to win, but you could obviously see Baku Retsu Sisters winning. There's certainly been matches before where I thought they might lose and they didn't. So it really was able to grab me and make me, you know, really focus in on the near falls to see who was going to win. So I was very invested in the closing stretch and enjoyed it quite a bit. And yeah. After the match, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, and I was just going to say, it's sort of an interesting story to, you know, put a pin in terms of Mei San Michelle getting the victory without Saki-sama, Saki-sama on the outside. You know, these sort of Niobe Shikigun stories, at least in recent months and years, have sort of been about Saki-sama, of course, is the leader of the group, and she, you know, is the 1A, and then she has these, you know, lower people, which is obviously in this case Mei San Michelle. But maybe that this is a story going forward, or it's something they come back to where Mei San Michelle says, well, I was the one who won, you know, the tag titles. I don't know if this continues to be a story where Mei San Michelle maybe wins, keeps winning without the assistance of Saki-sama, and that's a breakaway, because I think eventually, or I would imagine that at some point that Tokyo Joshi might be interested in having Mei Suruga in the promotion with her sort of personality and things like that. And so that the Niobe Shikigun is a good way to introduce her and sort of associate her with someone who is very well known in the promotion before eventually sort of giving her the storyline and breaking her free. Maybe that doesn't happen, but that was just something I thought of, you know, as the match was ending. I thought, oh, this might be an interesting story for them to return to in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and certainly something that would be fun, like a Mei versus Saki-sama match is interesting to me. I'd be interested in that. After the match, we got our first challengers for the new champions as the B-Star team of Mirai Mayumi and Suzume came out to challenge.
Yeah, and I'm it's a match I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to seeing how, you know, B-Star, a big opportunity, how they perform. And like I said, Mei San Michelle and Saki-sama, very talented team. So I think that that's a match that could definitely surprise, especially people who maybe are coming in just looking at the card and trying to identify sort of the well-known names, the Sakazakis, the Yamashitas, the, you know, Saki-samas, that they could really surprise. I think Mirai Mayumi gets better every time I see her. So very excited to see how that match goes.
So Niobe Shikigun are the new champions. And if you want to feel like a champion, I've got good news for you. Support for Jumping Bomb Audio is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. You'll feel like a champion after you've used the Manscaped products. You just head over to manscaped.com. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code JUMP. That's J-U-M-P at manscaped.com. You can get the Perfect Package 3.0, like Manscaped sent to Taylor and me. There's a lot of good stuff in there, including the Lawnmower 3.0, what they've termed the best ball hair trimmer ever. Well, you can only find out by giving it a try. It's got a ceramic blade that will reduce grooming accidents. No cuts from the Lawnmower 3.0. You'll feel confident when you're shaving. It also has an LED light on there, so you'll get a nice, precise shave. You can feel confident about not only that you won't cut yourself, but that you're getting everything that you want to. Also in that you can get the crop preserver that comes with the Perfect Package 3.0. It's a nice anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. I use it. I highly recommend it. Gives a nice smell if you are worried about that. And it helps with the chafing, which I think is most important. If, you know, COVID has maybe perhaps had us all put a few extra pounds on. So if your legs are rubbing up against each other, you need some anti-chafe mechanism. So head over to manscaped.com, use the code JUMP, J-U-M-P. You'll get 20% off and free shipping, and your balls will thank you. All right, the title match on the show, the Princess of Princess title match, Rika Tatsumi, the White Dragon, retained her title, defeating Maki Ito in, I would say, what was my favorite match of the show.
Yeah, I don't know. It was very close. It was probably neck and neck with the three-way tag for me. I went 4 stars on both of them, so sort of, you know, either or. A match I thought was really, I thought it was a really strong match. I thought they both looked good. I did. Aaron, you watched the show live. I watched it the next day, and I was, you know, it's funny. It's one of those things where I'm like, well, I haven't read any spoilers, but I also hadn't seen anyone say like, oh, you know, like in a U.S. wrestling discussion or something, say, oh, Maki Ito is the champion now. Maybe she'll come back to AEW as the champion and defend the title. So it's one of those things where you sort of think you know, you go, well, I haven't heard anything. So that means she probably didn't win, but I didn't know. You know, so I don't know if that maybe put a little bit of damper on the match where I was thinking, well, I don't think Maki won. And I think by the time I got to the match, in my mind, I didn't really see her winning. You know, the whole thing with, we talked about, they're doing English commentary on May 4th. And the whole thing was, well, are, you know, Tokyo Joshi trying to capitalize on this AEW momentum? But you would think if they were trying to do that, they might have put English commentary on this show to say, hey, AEW fans, come watch Maki Ito. And we've got English commentary, but they're not doing it till the next show. So it all just seemed to me to point towards Rika retaining, which she did in a match that I thought was very good and really showed off the strengths of both the wrestlers.
Yeah, it felt like early on, I was worried that it was obvious that Ito was going to lose because the match kicked off with a long segment of Maki Ito getting heat on Rika Tatsumi. It's like, oh, they're going to do this and then have the comeback and Rika's going to win. But I thought they did a really good job the rest of the match of kind of messing with your expectations and kind of going back and forth. And, you know, ultimately, you know, Maki had a little bit of a comeback in a weird way, even though, you know, Rika's definitely the... I mean, as we talked about before, there's sometimes not a clear babyface heel dynamic, but Rika is obviously like a babyface character, and Ito is a different sort of babyface character for sure. But they did a good job of messing with the expectations, I thought. I just thought, you know, we talked about on last episode, you know, the different reasons why it would make sense for Ito to win. But I mean, somebody asked me literally right before the show started, and I said I thought that Rika was going to win. I just, it didn't feel like the right time for Ito. As I said on the earlier show, I feel like there's still some road bumps for her to get over before she can be the champion. Or, you know, maybe her character is just not one that's ever going to be the champion. I think that's also a possibility. But she certainly has some other things to overcome before she should get there. I thought an important part of this match was it more than, okay, she beat Rika, beat Miyu Watanabe. Like, that's not a hugely, like, impressive victory. I thought this legitimized Rika as champion more. Obviously, Ito is an important character. But they also, even though it's kind of funny, they put over that Rika's butt, her hip attack, was stronger than Ito's head. And Ito has, you know, famously the hardest head in the world. So the whole story of the match, I think, helped to legitimize Tatsumi and also just to prove to any doubters that she's quite good. I mean, this was a very good match. So all in all, I thought it accomplished everything it needed to, and it was a good match.
Yeah, I think if you look at sort of Ito's storyline or what's happened to her, sort of what, you know, everything that's gone into her character in isolation, taking out, you know, the fact that she was in AEW, that people seem to like her or any of that stuff. And you just sort of focus on the universe, the quote unquote universe of Tokyo Joshi. It didn't seem like the time for her to become champion. Now, that doesn't disclude someone saying, oh, let's, you know, get some conversation going about this and make Ito our champion because people know her. That doesn't discount that, but it doesn't seem like Tokyo Joshi is that sort of company to do that. I certainly can't really think of anything in the past that I would point to and say, well, this, they were trying to, you know, change the title to get some buzz. You know, it doesn't seem like that's the way that they are trying to get to grow the fan base. And I have a feeling with Ito's story that you are right that maybe she never wins the title, but I think if she is sort of gearing towards winning the title, I think there's going to be a moment or maybe a match or something where I think for the audience, it's going to be very clear that this is the time and she's going to get the title match. And I have a feeling people are going to say, this is it. Whatever that is, whether she gets a big win somewhere, or she gets a series of wins or whatever it is, I have a feeling it's going to be very clear that this is the story moving to the next step. And that next step is Ito winning the big match. And this certainly didn't feel like that was the story in this match. So to me, that's why I was sort of like, oh, I don't think Ito wins. But, you know, regardless of that, I thought it was a strong match, a strong cap to the show. And in terms of sort of legitimizing, you know, Tatsumi's title reign, I think her next defense, which we can talk about with Miyu Yamashita coming out at the end, is really the thing. You know, we talk about, well, she can wrestle all these people and it legitimizes this. But if you wrestle Yamashita and beat her, that really is one of the big legitimizers in Tokyo Joshi.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is EUFY Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, that's massive. And to me, that's the whole point of this challenge, right? It wouldn't make any sense to me for Yamashita to just beat Tatsumi now. It makes a lot more sense to me to make Rika feel like a bigger deal because she beats Miyu.
Yeah, and Yamashita, as we always talk about, is sort of established. You know, it's funny, we talked about how she's winning all these singles matches. We do talk a lot about how she could probably handle losing matches, and I think this is one that she can lose to sort of solidify Rika at the top, you know, at or near the top of the pecking order in Tokyo Joshi.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now it feels like this can be, we talked last time about, well, it could be kind of a transition, but now it feels more like something that needs to breathe and could certainly be a long-term title reign for Tatsumi. So we'll see where it's going as they build to some of their bigger shows later in the year. All right, well, that's Tokyo Joshi Pro and their big show from earlier this week. Well, it was just, what, yesterday at this point, or 2 days ago. So that's that. We'll move on to Stardom, who started their Cinderella tournament, but a little different this year because the first round happened on April 10th at Corcoran Hall. The rest will occur on April 30th back at Corcoran Hall. Do you have any big picture or overall thoughts about this show, Taylor?
I thought it was interesting sort of seeing it in this format, this new format of 2 days. There's sort of a feeling that you always get, or at least I get watching these Cinderella tournaments, that it's sort of a night of chaos. And it sort of did throw me off that there was still a lot of chaos. People, you know, a lot of people eliminated over the top rope, a lot of fighting on the apron, things like that. But it didn't really feel in the way of like, oh yeah, I'm watching a Cinderella tournament, just because it's the first, you're so used to seeing people so many times and there's matches that are, you know, so fast. And most of these matches were very short, but a lot of times we've gotten even shorter matches in the Cinderella tournament. So I enjoyed it. But there was just a sort of feeling of like, oh, this is different, even though it's largely just sort of splitting up what they already do.
I agree with that completely. And I think what you're saying was the major part of it. But another part was there wasn't a tournament bracket going into the show. So I had no idea. It's like, oh, you know, I'm trying to think of what was a bigger upset. Like, oh, Rina beat Azumi. It's like, okay, well then, but who does Rina go up against next or whatever? And we really didn't know that until later. So that also, I think, made it difficult.
Yeah, and there were, you know, it's also sort of hard with these short matches to really look at the matches and say, oh, that was a, you know, ooh, what a great match, when the match is only going 4 minutes or something like that. You know, it's, you know, they are fun, and there was a lot of stuff I really liked. I really liked the elimination, for example, in the Mika Konami match, with her lifting Konami, Mika lifting Konami over the top rope, which looked really cool. And a lot of always, you know, you get the sort of fun top rope, over the top rope craziness, which is, you know, always good. And you get some upsets, including, sadly for Aaron, the departure of Momo Watanabe in round number one. I liked seeing the Fukigen death. I enjoyed her smoking a fake cigarette while she was pinning Mayu at one point. So overall good, but it's sort of hard to judge on the standards of a usual Stardom show where you have matches going 15, 20 minutes, and this, the main event, going 9 minutes and 26 seconds.
Yeah, as I'm thinking about this, it seems kind of pointless to like go match by match on this. Are there like, is there anything other than what you already said? Is there anything in particular you want to pull out about these first round matches?
I mean, the thing that, and it's probably because sort of the middle of the show was, but again, the only Oedo Tai member moving on to the second round being Rina was really, I don't know. It's very strange to me that you would think that the, I mean, I feel sort of like we've talked this into the ground, but the unit that needs the most help would maybe be able to get, you know, if you, you know, get Konami a win, get Natsukotora a win, you know, they don't have to win the whole tournament, but you'd like to see them, you know, come out and be able to, you know, get a couple wins to reestablish them, especially now that B Priestley is gone and they're sort of down. Remember, you know, they gained Fukigen Death, who really is sort of a just sort of bottom of the line, you know, going to get pinned a lot person. So that was really the thing that most stood out to me. Other than that, there wasn't a ton. There weren't a ton of results outside of the Oedo Tai stuff that really I looked at and went, whoa, I would have never predicted, you know, this person to come out, because for the most part it was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and you expect some like upsets, but they all are over the top rope upsets. You don't really see like, you know, you weren't going to see Rina pin Azumi or whatever, you know. So a few matches though that I enjoyed, you know, above the others, Micah and Konami. I don't know, it was cool. Konami was focusing on the arm and shoulder, but Micah was able to survive it, and then did a pretty cool suplex on the apron to throw over the top rope. That was just like one of the matches that stood out to me. Okay, Julia versus Ruaka stood out to me because Ruaka is still very bad, and it was fun to see, you know, one of, if not the best people in the promotion against someone who's very bad in a singles match. And you could see all the stuff that Julia was doing to try to make the match look good, to try to sell for Ruaka and try to get Ruaka over as like a monster. You know, she was like bumping really hard for her, but Ruaka like could not do what she needed to do to make it work. And so it was just like a very illustrative match. Like you could show to somebody who doesn't understand pro wrestling, that doesn't understand like what, how the wrestlers are doing certain things to try to help the other person. And you would have learned a lot by watching that match, I think.
Yeah.
But also, Julia had these like really funny military patches on her pants. Like one said Iraqi freedom vet. I wonder where she got those. Very funny.
Maybe just goes into a store and says, oh, I need patches. And they're like, here you go. Here's what we have.
One was like a POW MIA patch. Yeah, good stuff.
But overall, I thought it was a fun enough show. You know, there was nothing where I was like, oh, God. I mean, with this, it's very hard to, you know, have a match where you're like, oh, wrap it up. Because most of the matches, they start and you're like, okay, we're getting into it. And then they're over.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Mina Shirakawa proved again that she's good, actually. And the biggest bummer for me was probably the Sai Kamitani and Tom Nakano match, because I thought it was a lot of fun, but it ended pretty quickly. Even compared to the matches around it, it ended pretty quickly. It had a cool finish, though. So with Saya doing the Hurricanrana over the top. Anyway, that's the first round, basically, of the Cinderella tournament. Very easy watch if you haven't checked it out yet. But let's kind of seg from that into the second round and finals. It's a weird bracket that I don't quite understand, because not everybody has. In fact, there's only two second round matches. I tried to make sense of this on the Stardom's Japanese Twitter account, but I guess, is it just the number of people who are in the tournament?
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like the tournaments that Tokyo Joshi does where there's like 18 people. I think there's 20 in the tournament. I think they started with...
Yeah, they're 20.
They started with 20, and so that's just a weird number where some people have to have more matches in order to make it... Because it would be 16 would go, would be everyone would have the same number of matches, so then you add four people in the first round, and it doesn't quite line up.
Yeah, I would have simply just taken four people out of the tournament, personally. Also strange, usually, and maybe we'll see this on the second show, but you usually see a couple of either double eliminations or draws or something that makes for some weirdness. But I guess the weirdness was more in how the tournament was set up to begin with. So only two second round matches. We'll have Shuri versus Utami, and the winner will face Unagi, who beat Natsuko Tora in the first round, and then Mayu Iwatani versus Rina, and the winner will face Himeka. Any thoughts on those matchups?
So I think that Shuri beats Utami, because I think my thought is that Shuri is clearly going to probably get a title shot at some point. I don't know that she gets it from this, but at this point here, if you have her beat Utami, she then, even without winning the tournament, has some sort of claim to say, well, I beat you in the Cinderella tournament. So maybe it's a thing where the winner of the tournament faces Utami, Utami beats them, and Shuri comes out and says, well, I beat you in the Cinderella tournament. She's the next title defense, and maybe the title defense after that is Julia, because then that gives you, you know, 3 months or so. You know, that gives you the next 3 months of title defenses, and then you maybe have another month where you don't have to pull the Julia trigger for a little bit longer, especially while Julia is holding the tag titles with Shuri. And then I would assume Mayu beats Rina, but I would have assumed Rina wouldn't have won her first match. So the safe bet sort of is Mayu, but I guess there could be an upset.
Then there's two quarterfinals matches that are already set. Julia versus Micah and Starlight Kid versus Sayakami Tani. Is there a chance that they just fake us here and Julia just wins the whole thing again?
I mean, they certainly could. It would strike me as too soon to do that. But, I mean, they certainly could. I would think that you're at the point now where you've got some leeway with beating Julia, because obviously, if you're building her back up to face Utami and she wins there, then you won't have any wiggle room because she'll be, I mean, you will have some, but she'll be the champion. So you would think that maybe they could give Micah a boost and, you know, have her win this, but I guess Julia could win. It's not what I would do, but, you know, you can't put it past them to do that.
And so basically the semifinals will line up like this. You're either going to have Unagi, Shuri, or Utami versus Julia or Micah. And then you're going to have either Mayu, Rina, or Himeka versus Starlight Kid or Tall Saya. Do you want to go out on a limb now, Taylor, based on everything we know of your finalists and your ultimate winner?
So you want my two finalists, or you want the final four and then into that?
Yeah, let's do final four. That sounds fun. Let's do final four and your winner.
Okay, this is interesting. So final four, I think it's going to be Shuri against Micah. And then I think it's going to be Himeka against... Himeka against Sayakami Tani. And then the final two, I think, is going to be Shuri against Himeka, and I think Himeka wins.
Interesting.
Is that how I feel?
Is that how I feel?
I mean, I think the real contenders are Micah, Himeka, Shuri, And like you said, maybe they just go with Julia and they're like, Julia's back again. But that would be sort of a distant fourth for me. But it's something we've talked about where obviously Shuri is, I think, a little bit above Himika and Mika, but I have a hard time distinguishing what the plan is for Himika and Mika, whether they see one of them. It seems like they're more in on Mika. But Himika has at times been higher than Mika, you know, sort of booking wise. So yeah, it's hard to tell. What do you think?
Well, I was looking at when you mentioned Shuri and Mika, which I like that idea. I was looking at their history, and in Stardom, they've wrestled one time and Shuri won in the five-star last year. But they also wrestled once in Just Tap Out and Shuri beat her there. So is it time for Mika to beat Shuri, or is it something we can like build up more where Shuri beats her several times and then Mika, you know, finally figures it out and wins? But am I crazy for thinking like they did this whole match series, the 8-match, 7-match series with Unagi where she lost all of them? Am I crazy for thinking maybe they want to run a little bit with Unagi in this tournament?
I mean, she did win her first match now, she did win, but it was over the top rope. I just don't know that I see her going over, you know, she won the first round, but she doesn't have anything to me that says, okay, they're going to get behind her and think, okay, she's going to be, you know, at the top. If there was someone from Cosmic Angels besides Tom, it would be, in my mind, it would be Mina, who I also think is very good. So I just don't know. I think that they sort of gave her a nice win to be like, oh, she's getting better. And now, you know, I don't see her really beating. I mean, Utami and Shuri are either one. You're talking about probably a top five member of the roster. And I just don't think Unagi's at that point yet.
I just think, as we talked about on the last show, I feel like I've said that 100 times on this show, so I apologize. But truly, as we talked about on the last show, the Cinderella tournament is usually to like boost someone who's not quite at the top yet. And I feel like they already book Shuri very strongly. She's already had title shots. You know, she wrestled for the red belt on like one of their big shows. So I don't know that she needs to win this. And I don't think, I agree with you that they're not as behind Himika as I would be or as you would expect. Saya Kamitani's just recently had a big red belt match. So I could see Mika versus Shuri. I can see Himika versus, I could see either Kid or Tall Saya, really. I think either of those works. But I think I'm in on Mika winning the whole thing.
Unless, I guess they could be also, I mean, looking at it now, they could also be booking towards Himika versus Julia, and Himika beats Julia as sort of a return of the tag title match that Julia and Shuri won against Himika and Mika. Maybe that's the story, and maybe you use Julia, get her to the finals, and have her lose to someone to give them a big sort of an additional boost besides winning the tournament to beat, you know, Julia as well as part of sort of that last step. But, you know, I can see a lot of situations. There's people who, like you said, you can eliminate, you know, it's probably not Saya Kamitani. She just had a title opportunity. Starlight Kid seems unlikely. Mayu, it doesn't seem likely that they would give her another title shot. Rina, you know, so you're really looking at these. I mean, you're really looking at the Donna Del Mundo members, which continues to be fascinating because they seem like the members who are most sort of taken care of in Stardom. And it's going to be interesting to watch going forward what happens with that group, what happens with other groups, because it feels like they really have the company behind them. And I think part of that is sort of at the expense of some of the other groups in the company. And now you, you know, you're sort of making, you know, it's like, well, you're maybe making one or two new stars, but maybe at the expense of four or five other people who could probably use the help and are already pretty close, you know. 08 Otai, I don't know if they're in that conversation, but I think that they have really been hurt. Part of their whole thing is they've been hurt by Donna Del Mundo coming in, who sort of has a very similar, you know, I think they're less heel than 08 Otai sort of is seen as, you know, usually. But I think they occupy that space of sort of, oh, you know, very cool. You know, a lot of the talk in years past was always about 08 Otai. They're doing the dance. They're so cool. They're looking cool. And now a lot of that conversation is around Donna Del Mundo. So yeah, a lot of interesting things. And, you know, it will be interesting to see. I think all of these matches, the outcome of all of these matches are going to tell us a lot about all these wrestlers.
Donna Del Mundo should get a dance, is basically what I'm saying.
Look, you know my thoughts on dances. Everyone should get a dance.
All right. Well, that is the Cinderella tournament. Kind of unfocused, but we don't know much about what the rest of the tournament's going to look like. I'm looking forward to it, though, because as we just discussed, there's a lot up in the air and a lot to be decided about, like what the rest of the year for Stardom is going to look like, and, you know, what direction they're going to go in. So they've got me intrigued. I mean, I think a lot of the last several Cinderella tournaments, other than the one when Arisa won, you had a pretty good idea of who was going to win, and they generally did. Usually, the big surprise is usually the other finalist. You know, they kind of get up there, and maybe you didn't anticipate it. So I'm excited. We'll get to see somebody else, hopefully, somebody else get a shot and see who the company plans to go with. So. Well, I was going to say that's it for Stardom Talk, but I think the first thing we're going to talk about in the Spark Notes section is they ran on April 17th. Big news out of that, Julia and Shuri went to a time limit draw with the Momo Oz team of Momo Watanabe and Azumi, and that led to Julia challenging Momo Oz for the tag titles, so I guess they will have a tag title match soon.
Yeah, another... I have to say, I have gone on a rant on this program about time limit draws, but I think this one actually makes sense. It leads directly to the challenge of Julia challenging Momo and Azumi for the titles, and Momo said anytime. So we will see if they wait for a big show for that, or maybe that is. I think they have a Korakuen right after their Golden Week stuff ends. I think it's the week after, so maybe it'll be the top match on that Korakuen. Don't know yet, but we will see. And going back to Tokyo Joshi, Aaron, I don't know if you watch either of these, but Tokyo Joshi has launched an all-English show that will happen Wednesdays and Sundays. They're very short shows. Both shows lasted just under 20 minutes, I believe. They're one match, and everything is in English. They have Chris Brooks and Balianaki doing the commentary. They try to get all the wrestlers as well as they can to speak, to make English promos before the matches. All the ring announcements are in English. So it's a really fun, good way if you haven't gotten into Tokyo Joshi. If it's a bit overwhelming, this is a really great way to get into it because they're short shows. They're one match with the English commentary. The first show was a tag match, Mirai Mayumi and Miyu Watanabe against Hikari Noah and Senna Shiori. And the second show was Maki Ito and Pom Harajuku. And as I said, that will continue going forward. That's JP All English Show on Wednesdays. Wednesdays and Sundays at 10 p.m. So Wednesdays actually will be right as AEW Dynamite is coming to an end. So if you watch that program and you want more wrestling, you can just go right over to Wrestle Universe and get a little bit of a bonus. Ice Ribbon, the March 27th Korakuen show finally aired on Samurai on the 7th of April. This feels at this point like The world has moved on, but I did watch that show. Fun show. I recommend the Suzu Suzuki hardcore match, and the main event is good. Probably not their best Korakuen effort of the year, but still very strong, a great promotion. And as we'll talk about in a second, they have another Korakuen coming up very soon, which we hopefully will be lucky enough to cover on the show, because I think Ice Ribbon is having a great, really strong year. Their Peace League at the Peace Party shows are coming to an end. So there's a lot of closeness in the brackets, but as we will talk about on the upcoming shows, they have one more show with the sort of win or go home matches, which we'll talk about as that comes to an end. And then their big show in Skip City, Risa Sarah retained the Fantast Ice title against Tekla, and Maya Yukihi and Maika Ozaki retained the tag titles against the Dropkickers, Tsukushi and Tsukasa Fujimoto. Diana had a dojo show that was on YouTube, their usual dojo show, on the 11th. And today they are having their 10th anniversary show. I haven't seen any results for that. I don't know if it's airing anywhere. I would assume, or I would hope, or I would wish, or I would pray that it will air, because it looked like a fun show. But we'll see when that happens. Marvelous had one show on the 8th of April. The big news from there, Dash Chizako and Hibiki had their long-awaited singles match. That ended in a double countout and will lead to the Gaia show, which we will talk about on the upcoming shows. Choco Pro reached the end of Season 6 today at Choco Pro 108, which had the Best Bros against Psycho and Chango for the Asia Dream tag titles. They've been doing more collaborations with Heat Up. They had another show at the Heat Up Dojo where they managed to sadly, or I guess however you feel about it, break one of the walls of the Heat Up Dojo. They put a big hole in it, which was quite amusing, but probably not amusing having to fix it. And then in Pure J, Raiden Hagane defeated Kaori Yonayama to win the open weight title. So Yonayama's reign ends with a very short reign. I was sort of hoping it would be longer because she had promised that any singles match in any company she had would be for that title. But that is no longer. And that's everything that has been going on the last 2 weeks in Joshi.
All right. Well, as you promised, let's talk about what's coming up next, and we can start with the Gaia show.
Yeah, so probably the biggest show happening in the next 2 weeks is the Gaia big show. This was supposed to happen last year and was canceled because of all the COVID stuff. A quite exciting show. Unfortunately, it's not airing until close to the end of May on Gaora. I was hoping maybe it would have a streaming option, because I think the show is a very strong show, and you've got some things on it that I think are going to have big effects on the Joshi scene moving forward. So I'll run down the full card here. The first match, which is the sort of future match, on the Sendai girls side, Manami, Yurika Oka, and Cannon will go against the Marvelous side, Meiho Shizuki, Makoto Shindo, and Maria. Shima will be appearing, the man who appears everywhere, appearing here for this Gaia show against Leo Izaka. Not a Joshi match, but a match I'm really looking forward to. I think Izaka has always been slightly underrated. I've been sad that he isn't really used more often in other promotions, so a big chance for him, and hopefully I think he will deliver a great match. Sakura Hirota going up against the great Sasuke, so I'm sure that will be a very interesting match with a lot. I'm sure a lot will go on there. Dash Chizako and Hibiki are going to have a hardcore match to settle this disagreement. Hibiki always coming after Dash the last couple weeks. So the thing I really like, and we haven't even covered the whole show yet, lots of variety on this show. Whatever you're a fan of, I think you'll get a little bit of here on this show. Then they have a sort of Gaia the Past match, Chigusa Nagayo, Kaoru, and Sakura Hirota pulling double duty on this show. Will go up against Meiko Satomura, Chikaya Nagashima, and Toshie Uematsu returning. She had one short match last year in Wave, but has not been seen for quite a while. And then the main event, the big, the thing that will affect, I hope will affect Joshi, it will be the Marvelous side, Mio Momono, Rin Katakura, and X, going against the Sendai Girl side, Chihiro Hashimoto, Mika Iwata, and X. I believe, if I've read everything right, that the X's will be wrestlers chosen from the opening, the future match. I'm not sure how they will decide that, but the Marvelous team will choose one of the Marvelous wrestlers. Sendai Girls will choose one of the Sendai Girls wrestlers. And the winning team will receive the AAAW belts. Those were the belts that were defended and part of Gaia Japan. They are returning. Sendai Girls already has, you know, a singles title, already has tag titles. So they have said if their side wins, those titles will be put on display in the Sendai Girls dojo. Marvelous doesn't have any titles. So if they win, they would most likely become the titles for that promotion. And this match is just to win the rights of the title. So whichever team wins, if the Marvelous team wins, they would then, I would assume, have some sort of determining matches in Marvelous itself to determine those new champions. But an exciting show. The end of the long road to Gaiaism that both Sendai Girls and Marvelous have been on. It's at Ota Ward Gymnasium. So looks like it should be a very fun show.
All right, then we go to Stardom. On the 24th, they've got Mayu Iwatani taking on Azumi, which sounds fun. On the 25th, there'll be an artist title match with the Cosmic Angels against Oedo Tai. And then on May 2nd, their Golden Week tour will begin. Kind of funny that like Golden Week is going forward, but no fans for the Olympics.
Yeah, we'll see. And Stardom has a lot, you know, obviously the second is 2 weeks away, but they've got a number of shows as they always do that week for Golden Week. So we'll see. And, you know, we'll see if, you know, it's a usual Golden Week or it feels a little bit different. I know that Stardom, they had a number of, you know, in the past, these Golden Week shows have been sort of fun. They've been, you know, produced shows from the different units. That has gone away, unfortunately. So we will see what those shows are like, having so many shows that are going to be, I assume, as of now, sort of more straight-laced shows, whether they have the same feeling or if they feel a little bit different.
Then we have Seedling on the 26th. They'll have a tag title match with Nanai Takahashi and Arisa Nakajima taking on Honori Hana and Riko Kawahata.
Yes, and then Tokyo Joshi has shows on the 24th, the 25th, and the 1st. The 25th is actually at Ueno Park, and it is a mat show. They will not have a ring, but they will have they will wrestle on a mat. And the two matches announced for that show so far, Mio Watanabe against Moka Miyamoto and Mio Yamashita and Raku against Takari Noah and Arisu Endo. So if you liked the pay-per-view show that they did on mats a few months ago, I would say to check that show out. Ueno Park, one of my favorite venues. I always like watching wrestling from there. So excited to see that. And Ice Ribbon, as I talked about, has the Peace Party finals coming up. So the way it works is they have two matches. The first match, the A block, is Itsuki Aoki and Momokogo will go one-on-one. If either one of those wins the match, they win the block. if it goes to a time limit draw, Momo Kogo would win because she beat, it would end up being a three-way tie at 5 points between Yuki Mashiro, Itsuki Aoki, and Momo Kogo, but Kogo would go on because she beat Yuki Mashiro earlier in the tournament. And the B block is going to come down to Satsuki Totoro against Rina Shingaki. And the winner of that match will win the block. If they tie, I don't know what would happen. They would both be tied in first with 5 points, but I'm assuming that they would probably wrestle to a decision there. And then the Korakuen Hall show coming up on April 24th. It is not on the Samurai schedule as of yet, so I'm hoping it airs live. If that is the case, we will definitely be covering it on the next episode. Suzu Suzuki has her third match of the 7-match trial series, going up against Masashi Takeda. That match should be really good. Really looking forward to that. If you have not seen Takeda or not a Big Japan watcher, I think he's super talented, and I know that he and Suzuki have had matches in the past, so two opponents who are more familiar with each other, so expecting a lot from that. Matsuyu Uno will defend her triangle ribbon title against Cherry and Teihanma, which should be good. Those three members of the joint army, so that should be a fun stylistic match. Maya Yukihi and Maika Ozaki will defend their tag titles again against Hiroyo Matsumoto and Hiragi Karumi. And the main event will be the Drop Kickers Explode match, Tsukasa Fujimoto against Tsukushi Haruka for the Infinity title. That one should be very good, and should add another great match to Fujimoto's very strong year. So that is one to definitely look forward to. Should be a very fun show.
All right. Well, does that close out all our shows for the next couple of weeks?
I think it does.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about, Taylor?
Aaron, I think we covered it all.
So we won't be able to talk about Gaia next time. I guess, do we know when that Ice Ribbon Korakuen Hall is going to air?
No, all I know is that it's not currently on Samurai, which would lead me to believe that they would put it on, you know, either on Nico as they've done in the past, or Kips. Were they on Kips.fun? I get all these streaming platforms confused. Well, they did last time it was not on Samurai. They did live stream it. So that is my fingers crossed hope, because I would love to be able to cover that show.
Well, we'll talk about the Cinderella tournament, but hopefully we'll have something else to talk about on top of that. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I guess that's it. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at JBomb Audio. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Taylor's at Tay Mambo. Subscribe to the show, please. Give us a 5-star rating and a review. And if you want to donate to the show, you can do so by going to redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. But another great way to support the show is to head over to Manscaped and use the promo code JUMP, J-U-M-P, to get 20% off and free shipping. It really does help us on the show if you buy something with our code. It'll just make them continue to advertise with us, and that's good for us. So we would appreciate it. But I guess that's it. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye-bye.